In addition to the strategy and revisiting the vision and the mission, CTMA also looked at its values and revised and focused on certain areas of values that needed to be dealt with. And we set out a whole list of values that, that the organization felt were really important in its operating process, of particularly having integrity, honesty and ethics, diversity, transparency and openness, quality, accountability, responsibility and commitment, respect and trust. The process then addressed each operating principle and how that would be interpreted by the organization, and how the management and the board together would ensure that that was delivered. In setting up strategy, there also was a discussion in relation to ensuring that everyone focused in the strategy on what the functional purpose of the CTMA is, and that it's particularly got its mandate from the Labour Relations Act, and that it had certain mandatory functions and certain discretionary functions. The CTMA mandatory functions are conciliating workplace disputes, arbitrating certain categories of disputes that remain unresolved, establishing picketing rules, facilitating workplace forums and statutory councils, compiling and publishing information that's important and statistics, considering applications for accreditation and subsidy by bargaining councils and private agencies, and providing support for the Essential Services Committee. It has certain discretionary functions which constitute supervising ballots, and providing training when requested in relation to the primary objectives of the Act, and to advise parties on what the process they should follow if they have a dispute, offering to resolve a dispute which hasn't been referred to it, and to publish guidelines and rules in relation to the operations of the organisation should it so be needed. Also just to define who its users were, even though set out in the law, and that's set out specifically that individual employees, trade unions, businesses, and employers' organizations, and then also defining who the stakeholders of the organization are. In reevaluating and looking at the previous social strategy and then the new strategy, it was agreed that a lot of the goals had been met, but they should be elaborated on, and there wasn't much movement in relation to the overall strategic process, but just more refining in relation to the delivery of that. And so the goals are refined insofar as they say goal one will be to, we will position the CTMA to impartially promote social justice and economic development in the world of work. Goal two, to deliver professional, user-friendly, quality services with speed. And goal three, to maintain organizational effectiveness and strive for continuous improvement. The strategic objectives fed by those goals would then be to reposition the CTMA in the labour market, as you can recall, picking up from the original social strategy, and then also number two, to develop professional development and excellence, and making sure we show that our staff are valued. And number three is to have a high performance, high impact delivery of services with a balance between the quality and the quantity, and where social justice and restoring dignity are a central part of the dispute resolution process. Also then, to build a healthy organizational culture would be the fourth one in those goals, to the fifth one being to enhance and entrench internal processes and systems to ensure effective deployment of resources, and six, to enhance the holistic organizational design to enable delivery of the strategy. Having taken the goals and the strategic objectives, each goal was taken, and what I'm going to take you through now is how we have taken that and how our key performance area is and what the measurable would be in 2015. So firstly, to make sure we ensure continuous interaction with our stakeholders, in the right column to the right of the slide is the detail of how we would produce evidence in relation to that, promoting social dialogue and stakeholder partnership building. And also under that process of repositioning the CTMA, to make sure we have stakeholder empowerment and capacity building. CTMA does quite extensive training and processes in relation to the constituencies that it works with, and it's trying to target actually increasing that and to target specific constituencies, as particularly you can see in relation to vulnerable sectors. Then finally in that area, promotion of job saving and retention, making sure that the CTMA takes workers started doing in the economic crisis and championing the process, and to make sure that it's seen as assisting in job saving. Finally, to ensure we improve our public awareness and do work in relation to that, and make sure that we improve our working relationships with all the entities that we work with, and particularly the Labour Court, or I would say in relation to the Department of Labour, there's quite a lot of work done already, but making sure we continue with that, and then also give feedback and input into any amendments that may be required in terms of the Labour Relations Act. In relation to the professional development goal, and to make sure we've got a shift that we deal with that, we want to make sure we design and deliver the QCTO qualifications that the CCMA has been working on for several years, and to professionalise the commissioner training and the training of our staff, and to make sure that our training and development material is of quality and designed appropriately, and is assist and can be used externally in the organisation. Also, to develop research and facilitation tools and methodologies to make sure that we are able to put out information and training in relation to CCMA's work, and to make sure we have proper assessment and mentoring, which is very important in relation to the quality that we're trying to implement, as you saw in Goal 2, of the kind of work that CCMA commissioners are required. And also in our recruitment process, that all links in to make sure that the recruitment of people to become commissioners, our retention of them, and our processes designed to deal with it appropriately, have a proper performance management system, and to make sure that our training assists and produces good quality people. Then further in the professional development process, in relation to the next item, the high performance and high impact delivery of services with a balance between quality and quantity, and where social justice is important and it's focused on restoring dignity in the process of dispute resolution. We want to make sure that we promote mediation as a process of first choice, so that parties don't just say, I'm going to arbitration, I want a decision, I want an award. That mediating is important in relation to social justice transformation. And then also to transform workplace relations and promote social justice in a very specific way, to identify what we can do to improve the social justice delivery, and to make sure that workplace relations are improved and addressed in relation to the work that is done in relation to this. And then finally, in relation to our dispute resolution, to make sure that our dispute resolution and our dispute management programs are actually aligned and they target process, and that there's proper compliance with people utilizing them, and that the processes and the targets that we have set improve significantly over the period of time, and that we target areas where we notice that maybe people are not complying with processes or don't understand our processes, and we have a significant increase in the reduction of what we call blockages organizationally or in the system of our social partners and users to make sure that they operate effectively. And then also in doing that, to utilize our research departments and put out analyses to make sure that we solve the processes and are in a position to put the information out publicly. Then on the process of building a healthy organizational culture, as I mentioned earlier, the process in relation to values, we need to have new and revised agreed values and to bed them down through organizationally driven processes, and then to develop our practices that focus specifically on performance and to bed them down in a specific way, and that we link our performance organizationally to the remuneration that people receive in the organization, as well as performance recognized incentives. Also, to make sure that we communicate more effectively, one of the key areas that was identified in terms of the organizational control was that perhaps we needed better communication internally, and we're putting in quite a lot of focus in relation to that. And then to also make sure that all the policies that we have organizationally are appropriately aligned and have been updated. Some of them hadn't been updated for the last 5, 6, 10 years, and sometimes those kind of policies don't always work. And we believe that if you do that, you would be in a position to increase and improve your organizational health. And then finally, in relation to our internal processes and our systems, to make sure that those systems work effectively and that we utilize the resources that are allocated to us by the National Treasury in terms of the fiscus are appropriately. So to make sure that our financial budgeting and reporting is compliant with the CCM, with the PFMA, that we have unqualified audits and we comply at all times with the PFMA prescripts. To make sure that we source the best talent for the CCMA to do this and all other employees, and we retain that process. and then to review our application architecture. What that means is to look at our IT systems and to make sure that they are updated and maintained at a level that is required to make sure we have proper, effective business use, and it supports us in fulfilling all our goals. For example, putting out labour market statistics that we are required to do. Most importantly, to also make sure that all our risk management principles and planning and decision making is done in accordance with that. And if we have enterprise risk management documents that ensure that people can refer to and make sure that in conducting the process, we are addressing the risk issues in the organization. And then finally, to instill proper corporate governance principles to ensure that the governance principles that we have set out initially in the board are adhered to, that we update the board criteria and to comply with the King III principles, and to make sure that at all times the organization governs itself in terms of the requirements of all the required governance things, especially updated in relation to King III. So in relation to our Mozeta strategy, that is how our intention is to improve the organizational functioning that we've already started achieving in the previous 3 years in the social strategy, and then in relation to striving to succeed, even refining it and adding and expanding in relation to the mandate processes. Briefly touching on the budgetary matters that address the processes of the organization and are we able to comply with the budgetary processes, as well as does the strategy meet the budgetary requirements of the organization. I think it's apposite to start with a slide that demonstrates the current situation that the CCMA finds itself in. If you can look here, this is briefly a graph which demonstrates the caseload climb of the CCMA over the last few years. As you can see at the bottom in 2004 and 5, it was far less than it is now. And you'll see a tapering off when there was more economic certainty in 2006 and 7. But as the years have gone by and we've seen the economic crisis take place, we see a significant increase in the number of cases that are coming into the CCMA. There's quite a lot of economic research which demonstrates that the CCMA's caseload has historically mirrored the work in the economy, and that it is a direct, almost mirroring and reflection of what's going on in relation to that. We have previously said this to this committee. I think I said it in October, November when we came to present. And this is just a visible demonstration. It doesn't have the last part of the financial, the last month of the financial year, which is this current month, but it certainly demonstrates the slow creep in relation to the economic crisis. What the knock-on effect of that, of course, is that the work that the CCMA may have planned and the strategy issues that it may have wanted to address probably get put by the wayside to a large degree, because we then need to make sure that we channel all our resources into processing the cases and processing the work that has to be done in terms of the Labour Relations Act, as opposed to just some of the discretionary functions that the organisation has. And I'd like to take you to the next slide, which basically demonstrates in one picture what the CCMA's current financial process is. We are currently in a position where we are technically, we're not going to break even, but we are led to believe that the National Treasury is going to assist the CCMA. So if you look in the third column going in from the left, which is current 2009-10, our grant funding would be then at 356. Can you click to the next slide, please? If you look at the next slide, it's slightly different and it demonstrates the position as at the 9th of this month. That if we didn't get any additional funding from the National Treasury, we would be in a situation we would probably be 32 million rand in the red. Can you click back? That slide demonstrates in the middle the third column of the six columns there, that if we receive the 32 million, which we have been given oral confirmation that we are going to get, we will break even at the end of the year. However, the next slide demonstrates that if we are not in a position to, if we don't get the money, that we will be in a position where we finish the financial year in a deficit. I'm then going to move on to, next slide, the work that the CCMA is doing in response to the global economic crisis. And as I said and demonstrated in relation to the caseload climb, obviously the CCMA experiences quite significant work in relation to that. And this is just a brief slide which demonstrates from April last year to February this year the current rate of large-scale retrenchments. For those of you who are not familiar, Section 189A of the Labour Relations Act, and it sets out very specifically what's happening in relation to retrenchments. I think what's important, if you follow that red line, what it demonstrates quite significantly is that we thought that we were seeing a peak maybe in July last year, and then we saw another peak during October, and then things have tapered off quite significantly going into the up to January. I can make a few guesses. I know there's some members of the Portfolio Committee who come out of the retail sector. Maybe people were waiting to see what happens post the Christmas period before they started implementing retrenchment processes. But as you can see, we're seeing a sharp peak in large-scale retrenchments coming back into the organization. That's in relation to workers and employers being retrenched in 50, with 50 employees or more. The next slide demonstrates a similar pattern, which is quite alarming, and that is in relation to small-scale retrenchments. What that demonstrates is that in February we had 657 people, either individuals or up to 2-3 or anything up to 49 workers, coming into the CCMA having been retrenched already. Bearing in mind that the law in that process is that you would come into the CCMA once your retrenchment is finalised, and the CCMA would then try and resolve it in relation to that. And again, it demonstrates a very, very similar curve, as you can see, to the previous slide in relation to large-scale retrenchments. So I think that's quite a flag to see what's happening in the labour market at the moment and what's happening in relation to retrenchments in the country. The next slide is a slide that demonstrates and is indicative to you, which I thought we should address for the committee, and that is, if you'll recall, when I addressed you as a committee for the first time in late last year, we flagged that, and as the President himself had mentioned in his State of the Nation address, that the CCMA at that point had saved about 4,000 jobs. If you look here in the far right column, you will see since that period there's another 10,500 jobs that have been saved through the retrenchment and facilitation processes that have been conducted by the CCMA in the ensuing period. Given the focus that is on this area of work, we thought it would be apposite to demonstrate that. The other area of work which is quite publicly dealt with, the CCMA has had a very holistic approach to dealing with the economic crisis, and that's why we're demonstrating this to you this way. But a further area which was really summarized probably as an unfunded mandate, and that was our work in the training layoff scheme, and that is set out in the next slide. So far, although there's a lot of discussion around whether it's been successful or not, we've seen quite significantly this year a huge increase and interest in it, and it's starting to take traction, and more cases of this nature are coming in every month. So what you can see here are that there are 25 applications that the CCMA has actually processed from start to finish. 21 have been considered by our training advisory committee, 18 were recommended, 3 not recommended. They're then sent to the Department of Labour and National Skills Fund Committee, who have to approve them. 4 of the applications in that process were withdrawn or not taken up by the parties before the Dole committee could sit. There are 4 applications also in process with the CCMA to finalise the agreements. There are 6 applications waiting approval by the committee, and there are 4 schemes that have been approved by the committee, and the CITES are busy implementing that. This involves 4 main businesses and about 2,100 workers. Very briefly, that is the details as requested. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Norman. We are going to be listening to NEDLAC. Mr. Mkhize, Executive Director, over to you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. On the board issue, NEDLAC does not have a board, and I suppose the Chair is quite aware of that. But in the place of the board, we have a council that is made up of 72 members. and some of them are cabinet ministers. I bet to get them to my meeting. It will be quite a challenge to get them to appear before Parliament with me. But I will use the channel through the DG if it's in the interest of this committee to bring my counsel. So I don't have a single member. Oh, I do have some members of that council who are here by default. They are here representing different institutions and government. I do have some of them sitting in this corner. Madam Chair, I think the first issue that is worth mentioning is that NetLeg is only found in 14A Jellicoe Avenue in Rosebank in Gauteng. Only one office. So our footprint is only in Gauteng. We don't have branches in other provinces. We were set up through an Act of Parliament, the National Economic Development and Labour Council Act, number 35 of 1994. We remain a contested terrain. This is where people come and fight without fighting the four constituencies, that is. And there is a general acceptance of the principle that amongst the four social partners in NetLeg, there is no party that has a monopoly of solutions. So any party can raise or table what they think is a solution to a particular problem. Inherent in social dialogue is that it takes time, and it tends to irritate a lot of people, the time it takes to finalize or to conclude this dialogue in that way. NetLeg also is about securing a commitment, it's about partnership, and it's about broader participation of the society in policy making in this country. It falls quite nicely within the people shall govern concept, as it were. Our mission is that of building an enduring partnership, is that of addressing urgent challenges, and instead of lending a hand. What underpins this mission, amongst other things, are the following. We draw our directive from the State of the Nation address, and I think it's quite instructive that the theme that ran through this year's State of the Nation address was the year of action. Of course, we don't trigger action as NetLeg, but we spring into action if the executive authority proposes things that raises our appetite as NetLeg. So if ministers don't propose any new laws or new policies, NetLeg could be moribund. So it remains to be seen then the kind of action that the president is talking about. As soon as that action comes, NetLeg is going to spring into action. So that's the first source where we draw our directive. The second source where we draw our directive is the budget speech. And the theme in the budget speech this year was more or less the call for a new normal or partnership, if you like. The Minister of Finance quoted both business and labor in terms of ensuring that we have a common vision going forward. So that's very much going to be an issue that we're going to deal with. And NetLeg has quite an interesting track record when it comes to building a common vision. We did that in 1997 through a project called the Masakane Campaign. It was very much a product of NetLeg. We did it again in 1998 through a project that we called the Presidential Job Summit. We did it again in 2003 through a project called Growth and Development Summit. We did it again in 2008 through a project called the Electricity Crisis Framework Agreement of NetLeg. And we did it again last year through the project called the Framework for South Africa's Response to the Global Economic Crisis, which everybody agrees that it has never been done this way anywhere else in the world. We are getting credit and accolades as a country in terms of how we use this institution to develop a response to the global economic crisis. So I suspect, therefore, that when the Minister of Finance was talking about the new normal, And when COSAT was talking about a new shared vision, and when Business Leadership South Africa was also talking about developing a common vision in South Africa, my suspicion is that this is the work that will end up in NEDLAC, because we've got an excellent track record of building, of developing a common vision. Don't ask me about how well do we implement. I think that's another matter. But in developing a common vision, we've got an excellent track record. Another source where we draw our directive is the medium-term strategic framework. We've seen the 10 key priority areas in the medium-term strategic framework, and that's very much what's going to set the tone in the NEDLAC work program going forward. The government program of action is another important source for NEDLAC, where the social partners in NEDLAC, they will cherry-pick from the program on what policy issues they would want NEDLAC to engage on. In some instances, the cherry-picking is not that perfect. We cherry-pick and we leave one something out, and that thing happens to be the key thing that perhaps we should have kept our eye on, and it's something that we always rectify at a later stage. The fifth area that we, from which we draw, is the budget vote. Perhaps this is the most important one, because at the moment we don't have any idea as to what government and the various government departments tend doing going forward, particularly in terms of the five key priorities of government. And that can only become clearer as departments table their budget votes, because there you see their action plans. And what is likely to happen, therefore, is that once all the executive or the government departments have tabled their budget votes, the NEDLAC social partners will definitely go back to that and see if in those budget votes, in those strategic plans, action plans, are there issues that are worthy of NEDLAC taking up. And of course, the last area where we draw our directive are the issues that business in its own right may raise as issues that they would want NEDLAC to grapple with, issues that organized labor in its own right may raise as issues that they would want tabled in the NEDLAC work program, likewise the community constituency. So our agenda or the work program of NEDLAC is very much informed by these six or so areas going forward. Our mandate, very simply, we strive to promote the goals of economic growth, participation in economic decision-making, and social equity. We seek to reach consensus. So we take decisions by consensus in NEDLAC. We don't vote. We deal with all significant changes to social and economic policy. And we also encourage formulation of coordinated policy. And all labor legislations in this country comes through NEDLAC, and we've had an excellent track record on that front, in that there is not a single piece of labor legislation in this country that has not been a NEDLAC deal, so to speak. So all of them are a NEDLAC deal. So we've been very, very fortunate indeed. And we resolve socio-economic disputes in terms of Section 77 of the Labor Relations Act. The instruments we use to do this is we negotiate. The Minister of Finance, we negotiate so much that sometimes he calls us the talk shop. He's called on us this year to move from being a talk shop to an action shop if we are to develop the new normal. And we told the Minister that we're ready. We're ready to deal with that challenge. We consult. There are instances where we consult first before we start developing or we start engaging on issues towards developing policy. I think the discussions on the labor broking in NEDLAC are a classical example of consulting before we start looking at a possibility of developing policy. We share information. I think the labor broking discussions or conversation in NEDLAC earlier towards the end of last year is an excellent example where social partners are given the opportunity to share information around something that is seen as a huge challenge in the economy. We do research. I mean, I can tell you there are many papers that were delivered in a very short space of time when we're dealing with labor broking. Enough papers. So a lot of information on that score. And then, of course, we deal with Section 77, for which we have a permanent standing committee. And we are often confused. I mean, I think in other instances it's even worse, because some people think we are NetBank. So that's the worst confusion that people could have about NetLag. But on a more serious note, I mean, there's also some confusion about whether or not we are the lawmakers. We don't make law as NetLag. Lawmaking is an exclusive preserve of this House, of Parliament. We don't make the law. But what we do, we influence and shape the law. But ultimately, the responsibility to make law resides here in this House. NetLag is not a law or policy enforcement agency. After having made the law, after having influenced or shaped the law as NetLag, it's not our responsibility to enforce it. But what we do, we hand that responsibility to enforce to a relevant agency. For the law is the Department of Labor. And if we think that it will be useful to set up new institutions to ensure that there's monitoring and evaluation, we also hand that over. After establishing an agency, we will also hand that over to the Department of Labor. I mean, in fact, all the institutions that spoke before me in this House, we created them as NetLag. So if they don't work, I think NetLag might take some, may have to take some responsibility for it at some point. But we created all of them that spoke before me. And we are proud that we created those institutions. We just have to make them work in case of those that are having challenges. We are not a collective bargaining agency. So if there's a problem of wages in South Africa, it's not an issue that must come to NetLag. But we have developed a very robust institutional framework that deals with collective bargaining in the form of bargaining councils and so on. We are also responsible for establishing the bargaining council. We are not a workplace dispute resolution agency, CCMA is. We also were responsible for establishing CCMA, it's our baby. And NetLag is not an implementation agency. So there are people who would ask NetLag how we're doing on implementing some of the policies that we had put in place. It's not our responsibility. What we do for implementation, we either create an agency to assume the responsibility of implementation if there isn't an appropriate one at that point, or we delegate to the existing one, as it were. So I think it's important that we clarify this particular issue as well. Next slide. Thank you very much. This is NetLag in brief. We have the National Summit, which is chaired by the President of the Republic of South Africa. It happens once a year. We bring in no more than 300 delegates to the summit, but in the summits that we've had recently, we've had more than 300 people attending our national summit. So it's chaired by the President of the Republic. Then we have the Executive Council. The Executive Council is the only structure that you'll probably see when you look at the Act, because that's the structure that is called NetLag. It's made up of 72 members. Then we have the Management Committee, which has 16 members. Then we have chambers. That's where the real art of fighting without fighting takes place in NetLag. That's the engine of NetLag, the four chambers in NetLag. We have government. Next slide, please. The engine room of NetLag is made up in the main of five key work streams. We have trade and industry chamber, which is led by the Department of Trade and Industry. Here we deal with trade, investment, and industrial policy. Every issue that has to do with trade, investment, and industrial policy is dealt with in that chamber of NetLag. And you'll be quite keen to know, honorable members, that every position that the Minister of Trade and Industry stands up, be it internationally, locally, or in the continent, and articulates on this country's trade policy, is developed in its entirety in NetLag. In its entirety. So when the Minister of Trade and Industry stands up and says the position of the country on these matters is this, it's because that view has been developed in NetLink. And also when they come to Parliament to seek the mandate of Parliament on some of the policy propositions, those policy propositions already carry the agreement of the NetLink social partners. We then have the Labour Market Chamber. This is where we deal with labour market policies. And this will be the area that will be close to the core functions of this portfolio committee. And here is labour market policies. Every labour law is dealt with in that chamber. Every labour market policy proposition is dealt with in that chamber. There are quite a couple of issues that relate to the labour market policies at the moment that are being dealt with in that chamber. Then we have the Public Finance and Monetary Policy Chamber. This is the chamber that deals with fiscal and monetary policy. So the national budget, when it's announced by the Minister of Finance, the elements of it is dealt with in that chamber. When the policies that are implemented by the central bank, the Reserve Bank, in part emanates from the engagements in that chamber. Then we have the Development Chamber, which basically looks at the social dimension of policies in this country. So they will take up any policy emanating from the labour market policy and ask difficult questions about whether or not the labour market policies that we have in place in this country, to what extent are they addressing the developmental challenges in this country. That will be the responsibility of that chamber. And then we have standing committees, three of them. The first one being the Section 77 Standing Committee, a very powerful committee indeed, because this is the committee that ensures that the right in the Constitution to protest is actually, you know, enjoyed by the workers without the fear of being disciplined for participating in protest action. It's a responsibility of that committee. Demarcations is a committee that works very closely with the CCMA and the Department of Labor. It's a committee that deals with bargaining council's demarcations. So in a bargaining council dispute where some sectors may argue that they don't belong in a particular bargaining council scope, those matters are arbitrated by the CCMA, but NetLink must vet the CCMA award before it goes to the registrar. So the three institutions work very much hand in hand there. And then we have the standing committee we call TESELICO. This is a standing committee that deals with the trade policy in South Africa, and is located in NetLink. These are the ladies and gentlemen that if nothing goes well in NetLink, they should take the blame. We have the Minister of Public Works, who is one of the lead ministers from government. He sits in the Executive Council. The Minister of Finance serves on the Executive Council. The Minister of Trade and Industry also leads the government's Executive Council team in NetLink. And then we have the Minister of Labour, who not only has a seat in NetLink, but is also the overall coordinator of government in NetLink. Together with them, they bring 14 additional members when they come to attend a NetLink Executive Council, so to take up their allocated 18 seats. For Labour, we have Dennis George, the General Secretary of FEDUSA. We have Manene Samela, the General Secretary of NAPTU. We have Zwelin Zimavavi, the General Secretary of KSATU. For Business, we have Andre Lambrecht, as the National Chairperson of BUSA. And we have, Brian Molefe as the President of BUSA. For community constituency, we have Ruth Bengu, the president of SAMCO, Laura Kanyaho, the general secretary of Women National Coalition, Holistica Tony, the general secretary of Disabled People of South Africa, and we have Tulani, who is the president of the South African Youth Council. And then we have the overall conveners of each of the constituencies. Jimmy Manyi, the Director General from Government Rep, he's an overall convener of government in NetLink. Then we have Begin Chalinjale, the Deputy General Secretary of COSATU. He's responsible for labor. We have Dr. Lorraine Lauter, responsible for business, and Lula Manare, who is responsible for the community constituency in NEDLAC. I think we're going to move a bit quicker now. So that's the team. The process in NEDLAC is that the tabling of policy is governed by a protocol, and that protocol is an agreed protocol by the parties in NEDLAC. Normally, government will table its program of policy and legislation in NEDLAC, often at the beginning of the first quarter of the year. Labor, business, and community likewise will table their own proposals in terms of what should inform the NEDLAC work program going forward. Can we get the next slide, please? There may also be instances where interventions of relevant ministers may be required. I think in the last period, we had two sessions with the Minister of Trade and Industry. We had a session with the minister, the former Minister of Transport, who is now the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development. So we had a couple of ministers that we engaged with. If we hit a snag, we asked the minister to come in so that we can deal with those issues. Parties are bound not to reopen discussions in Parliament or any area where agreement in NEDLAC was reached. So if we engage on an issue in NEDLAC and we reach an agreement, and that issue is en route to Parliament because it requires law to give effect to it, parties that have agreed on these issues are not allowed to then chase the issue to Parliament and reopen NEDLAC deal. So when I say parties, I'm not talking parties within the context of this House. I'm talking parties within the context of NEDLAC, as in social partners. By all means, parties in this House can reopen anything. Parties can reopen anything. But for the NEDLAC social partners, they can't open. So the executive authority cannot agree in Rosebank on what should happen on a policy and then run to Cape Town to change it. However, there are instances where we also do pick up some problems in some instances. Next slide, please. I'm not even going to talk to this. I think we are excellent. We are an excellent institution. So in terms of our relevance, there's no question about it. In fact, it was confirmed by Professor Eddie Webster before he retired that social dialogue, it has become what white stripes are to a zebra. So you remove those stripes, it's no longer a zebra, but a black donkey. Or if you choose to remove the black ones, it's no longer a zebra, but a white donkey. So we've become so integral in terms of the culture of the society. So he argues that the question of relevance of social dialogue is not an issue. Well, issues are about whether we deliver on our mandate, whether or not we deliver quality policies. But I've also heard commentators saying in this country, the problems and the challenges in this country is not so much about policies. We've got excellent policies. It's more about implementation. So we take the credit as well for the state of health of policies in this country. Next slide. The scope of issues in our work program, as I said earlier on, is very much shaped by these issues. State of the Nation address very much shapes the work program of NEDLAC. The budget speech does that. The government program of action, the medium-term strategic framework, the budget votes, which are more important because they give us a sense of what each government department intends doing. And of course, what happens is that media, what we may be telling you now of what is our strategic plan is going forward may change, depending on the appetite of the social partners in terms of what issues they may want to pick and run with as budget votes become clearer moving forward. I think we understand that the key priorities of government, amongst others, is to speed up inclusive economic growth, decent work and sustainable livelihoods. So that's going to permeate into our work program. There will be issues in our work program that will deal precisely with that particular key priority. Massive program to build economic and social infrastructure. You're going to be seeing that more often than not as testimony that our work program is informed very much by what government identifies as the national agenda or the key priorities going forward. Access to quality education, intensify the fight against crime, corruption, improve the health profile of all South Africans, but among other issues. Next slide, please. Now, just very briefly, in terms of what is the menu of the policy issues that are in the trade and industry chamber. Now, the real work of NEDLAC. We're going to be reviewing the development finance institutions mandate. I think this became quite sharply during the global economic crisis because some of the DFIs, when they were called to come and intervene to help distressed sectors, for an example, they soon discovered that their mandates were not flexible enough to allow them to do certain things. Some of the DFIs' mandates are so problematic that if they were to make a presentation without putting a heading, a DFI, you might think it's any commercial bank in South Africa that is presenting. There is no difference between a DFI, what they do and how they do things, and a conventional commercial bank. And we think we've missed the boat there, because DFIs are meant to deal with the gap, as it were. Fast-tracking the cooperative strategies are some of the issues that we're going to be looking at. The WTO trade policy issues and the bilateral and multilateral trade negotiations. We are, for an example, on Thursday next week, going to be signing off on the Mercosur preferential trade agreement. It's an issue that we're looking at. Next slide, please. And we're also dealing with the customs excise. The customs has become a huge problem, particularly in the clothing and textile sector, where goods end up in this market illegally, and they end up killing the local industry, as it were. The ITEC Act is also an issue that is very much on our agenda in terms of whether or not we can be able to raise tariffs on certain lines that we consider strategic. Land reforms and agricultural or agrarian reforms is an issue that sits very much on this agenda. Next slide, please. The next policy workstream is the labor market chamber, which is a chamber that deals with very much the issues that are relevant to this portfolio committee. The social plan review, it's a matter that we finalized. We're now just finalizing what is it that we need to do, taking it forward, and also the work of the teams that are dealing with the framework for the global economic crisis are also taking up that issue. Labor broking is an issue that is on our radar screen. We've dealt with the first part, the consultations part, just to get a sense, if you like, which is taking the temperature amongst the NEDLAC social partners on the matter. So we've got a better sense now in terms of the stances that are, at least the initial stances, that are taken by the various social partners on labor broking. So it will soon be on our radar screen. But we are not the ones who are going to trigger this at NEDLAC. It's going to be triggered somewhere else. So we're waiting. Insolvency bill, the labor court rules. We have now received a letter from the judge president of the Labor Appeals Court. We're setting up now the rules. Board. We're setting it up now. It's been an issue, but finally we've gotten around that. Immigration Act, the Minister of Home Affairs has signaled that there are certain issues that she would want to amend in the Immigration Act, and it's a matter that is en route to that chamber. Employment equity, government has signaled that they would want to amend certain areas in the employment equity. It's a matter that very much sits with us. The Superior Court's bill, the Minister of Justice has signaled that he intends taking the Superior Court's bill back to Parliament. I think the relevance of this is that it collapses the SCA, the Labour Appeals Court, into the High Court, as it were. So it's a matter that we should be of quite interest to us because of difficulties. The one difficulty in the current Labour Court, a shop steward can go and represent a worker. But in a Supreme Court, as we understand it, only advocates, not even a lawyer can go there, an ordinary lawyer can go there. Only advocates that can appear. that have a right of appearance in the High Court. Now, what's going to happen to those shop stewards? Who, some of them, they give real lawyers a hiding in the Labour Court. That's how well trained these shop stewards are. They give them a hiding. Now, they will be blocked by some bureaucracy from continuing to represent workers once the Labour Court has been collapsed into the normal system. So it's a challenge that we need to deal with. I think there are many other areas that I'm going to skip. Can we get on to the next slide, please? The Development Chamber, which is another work stream in NEDLAC, is dealing with the expanded public works program, phase two. There is a code there and the business plan. We finalize those processes. They're likely to be signed off at the management committee meeting next week, Thursday. HIV and AIDS is back on the agenda. Public transport, very much back on the agenda of that policy work stream. And the Office of the Deputy President of the Republic of South Africa has also tabled in NEDLAC recently government's proposal on the anti-poverty strategy, and it's a matter we're going to be dealing with, and it sits very much in this policy work stream. We are planning to have an engagement with the Minister of Human Settlements to discuss the strategy of how to deal with some of the issues in there. And we are also planning a meeting with the Minister of Higher Education and Training and Basic Education to understand the strategy going forward. But we can only do that once we have had their budget votes. I think the Basic Education is doing its budget vote on the 23rd. So once we get a sense of what their budget votes are about, we're going to be moving forward on that. Comprehensive social security is another matter that sits very much on that agenda. Next slide, please. And then we have the fiscal and monetary policy work stream. In this work stream, I mean, the issues have come to the head. And I think the national budget was in part responsible for the renewed energy around dealing with the question of fiscal policy and monetary policy, the national budget processes, and of course the global financial crisis aftermath. These are some of the issues that feature very much on the radar screen of that chamber. And these were issues that were also discussed with the Minister of Finance 2 days after he tabled his budget in the NEDLAC Executive Council. The National Health Insurance Scheme, it's a matter that is on the radar screen, but of course we're waiting for government to indicate its state of readiness to table this proposition in NEDLAC. Next slide, please. On communication side, these are some of the things we're doing. Those who have visited our website recently, you'll see a huge change in terms of how it looks like, the look and feel, and also its user-friendliness. And next slide, please. On human resources, we have commissioned now an organizational development project that is going to look at NEDLAC as an institution and say what is it that we need in terms of systems, in terms of resources, human and financial, and our inability to attract skills to NEDLAC is in part as a result of our financial inability to pay these guys. I think the people who are skilled, they come at a prime. And we just don't have the capacity to pay them. It's a matter that we are raising very sharply with the department, and the department is warm to the idea of giving us more money. I think they're very warm with the idea of giving NEDLAC more money, because the department, they see the value that we bring as NEDLAC. But the difficulty is that they don't have the money themselves, apparently. So the appetite to give us, the warmness to give us, and enthusiasm to give us money is dampened by the fact that they themselves don't have the money. So we really do need money. I mean, I think, for an example, in the financial year that is ending now, at the end of March, as a result of things that were not of our making, We ended up really spending something like 3.5 million more than what we had planned for, and it's things that we couldn't say no. I mean, the first one was when the deputy president, who was the president then, said we need to do something about the electricity crisis in 2008, the blackout, that we need to do something. And he said that process must be located in NEDLAC. Quite expensive process. We had to go to Cape Town at some point. And as if that was not enough, last year the same president, who is now the deputy president, said we must do something about the global economic crisis. And he said NEDLAC must deal with it. Expensive stuff. We had to go to Cape Town a couple of times. First, we went for the presidential joint economic working group. It's an expensive exercise. And there were task teams that had to meet in Cape Town because some ministers that were relevant to those processes happened to be in Cape Town during that period. And the bulk of the meetings were happening in Pretoria, so not in Rosebank where we were. And we just in cat course, but we couldn't say to the commander-in-chief in the Republic, no, we can't do it. We had to do this. So there are those things that we need to take into account. So going forward, really, if we can't get some money, Jimmy, we're going to have huge problems. We may have to tell the commander-in-chief that there are certain things we can't do and look at other ways of dealing with those issues. That's on the HR side of things. Special projects that we have, it flows again from the budget speech and also from the quote of the Minister of Finance on what Labour had to say about the new growth path. And Michael Spicer, the CEO of Business Leadership South Africa, on the need to develop a common vision for South Africa if we are to move forward. And as I said, my sneaking suspicion is that exercise will end up in NEDLAC, purely out of the good track record of being able to develop common visions, as it were. Working towards a new growth path to transform the economy to one that meets the basic needs of our people, I think it's something that will end up in NEDLAC, whether we like it or not. Because if achieving this objective would require tweaking some policies, now the NEDLAC Act requires the executive, if they want to tweak policy, to bring it to NEDLAC, so it's likely to end up in NEDLAC. Finding convergence on the Industrial Policy Action Plan 2, it's a matter that is coming to NEDLAC definitely. The Labour Market Policy Review is already in NEDLAC. The Decent Work Country Programme, addressing the challenge of labour broking, new growth paths for South Africa, are the key special projects for NEDLAC going forward. So these are some of the things that we will first, when we come back to report on how we're doing, these are the first things that we will tell you how we're doing on them. Before diving into other things. Next slide, please. The last NEDLAC Executive Council, which happened on the 19th of February, instructed NEDLAC to develop a country accord on electricity crisis. Here comes another exercise that is going to be very costly, but the directive is that we need to develop this compact for the country. The national framework on the global economic crisis aftermath. Some people are saying we see recovery, economic recovery globally, but some people are saying, well, they talk about green shoots. Some people are saying, well, they may not be green shoots, they may just be leaves that have fallen off. They'll soon dry up. And some people argue that the recovery is going to take a U-shape. So it's going to be gradual and then shoots up. Some are saying it's going to be V. Some are saying it's going to be W. So you're going to go up, down, up, and so on. And in that case, we need to be ready to deal with these issues. And I believe the Economic Development Department is in part dealing with some of those issues. Vision 2025, it's an issue that very much talks to the common vision going forward. And I think it's if one has to take what government is saying, that in developing Vision 2025, they're going to be consulting with social partners in this country, and where you find all of them in one room is in NEDLAC. So I suppose it might end up going there. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. So this is how much we're getting for this period 2009-2010. We're getting 15. Then from 1st of April, we're going to be getting 16. But we are banging down the DG's door. We're saying we want more money. At the very least, we need another 10 DG on top of what we'll be getting next year, at least 26. To keep us going. It will be quite nice. And then, of course, that will have a knock-on effect to the ensuing years going forward. But that's the focus for this year. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. Challenges in NetLAC, which will probably be my last slide. The demand on NetLAC far outstrips its financial resources. You remember, honorable members, at some point we came here, we said the executive was finding every trick in the book to run away from coming to NetLAC. We have a different problem now. All of them want to come to NetLAC. Every single minister wants to come to NetLAC. Of course, that comes with some demands. That will just collapse that institution if all of them were to come tomorrow. We just would not be able to cope. So we've got a new problem, a new challenge, which is much better than the earlier challenge, thanks to you members. Inability of the institution to attract the requisite skills due to financial constraints. What we've soon discovered is that getting these skills into the organization come at the prime. We just don't have the money to pay the people that are required to take the institution to a different level. Some, albeit few cases of issues being tabled met like a short notice. We raised this last time as a problem, government departments tabling issues at net like a short notice, but there are fewer and fewer cases now of such instances. So we're happy that we're dealing with that challenge. The disconnect between national social dialogue outcomes with what happens at provincial and local level. We have these nice deals at NetLAC at a national level, but they do not mirror what's going on at provincial and local level, because we don't really have robust and well-established social dialogue institutions at provincial and local level. I think in part, one of the culprits why we're having this service delivery problem, it's because there is a lack of a forum where people can talk about these things. So the only way that people can attract the attention of the authorities is when they take to the streets. And that's the only way that they will see a leader coming to deal with their problems. Incoherent policy objectives, lack of synergy. I mean, quite often, I mean, you look at some of the policies coming out of the Department of Labor. Department of Labor, if you look at it quite carefully, they're looking at better ways of how to protect workers using the instruments that they have at their disposal. That's government, but in the form of the Department of Labor. They want to tighten up the law. But within government, you do find voices that are actually saying the opposite, that are looking at more flexibility, you know, that are arguing for things that goes totally against the grain of tightening up. So that's a problem. There's no synergy. It does create a bit of a problem. We've seen it also when we were looking at the 10 products that will be ring-fenced for SMMEs. The decision was taken a long time ago, but it can't happen because the decision was taken at the DTI, but in order to make it happen, you've got to get the National Treasury to fix the law. The challenge of policies that straddles more than one government department is also an issue. And it will soon be one of the issues, the new issues for the Department of Labor in terms of how you deal with skills development, artisans part or industry based and so on. It's a challenge that you're going to find going forward. Next slide, please, and I think it's the last one. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think we allow honorable members for questions. Honorable Shelley.
Thanks, Acting Chair. The only questions I have are directed to NetLAC. Recently, or as the fourth parliament came into existence last year, this portfolio committee embarked on a labor brokering mission to find out the extent of labor brokers within the labor market. What we were confronted with during the hearings were a business coming in and saying that we are busy with public hearings, but already at NEDLAC, the process are in an advanced stage. Now, we know very well that before the fourth parliament came into existence, the issue of labor brokering was already at NEDLAC, but for some reason, I don't know whether no agreement was reached between the partners and at NEDLAC or what, but I know that as we were busy with these hearings, we were told that you are busy with hearings. At NEDLAC, we are already at advanced stages with this process of labor brokering. So we found that very strange, because at the end of the day, making laws resides with Parliament. Although NEDLAC becomes the facilitator and at the end of the day brings back whatever agreements that were reached to the department, and the department has to bring it to Parliament to make it official. But during this process that we were in, there was no synergy, or NEDLAC did not understand that if the process, if Parliament has already started with this process, or they are continuing, or their Parliament has their own process, and we, knowing very well that we were having our own process before the fourth Parliament came into existence, let us stop and wait for Parliament to continue with their process, and at the end of the day provide a report or recommendation to us. I want Mr. Mkhize to explain to me what happened there, because we were really at times very seen to be just parliamentarians going out there to conduct hearings or to do something, whereas the process already at NEDLAC is at other stages. That's what most of the labor brokers themselves or the facilitators claimed. And they said, we are asking for recommendations from people here whether this practice has to be scrapped outright or regulated. At NEDLAC, there's something else. So I just want to get that understanding, because I heard you correctly when you said that NEDLAC cannot make laws, but at the end of the day, in your facilitation, you tend to skew the lines, because when other people talk about something else and we go out and talk about something else, there was that confusion. And I would also just, my second and last input would be the provincial social dialogue institutions that are not there, that are not in place. And I would propose that as this committee, we should embark on looking at this thing, so that at the local government or at provincial level, the social dialogue is in place, because that would improve service delivery, and at the end of the day, it would also bring speedily or advance whatever is taking place or whatever has been decided at the national level. That's it. Thanks, Jack.
Any more questions? Clarity? None. Okay. Mr. Mkhize, it can be that in that network you are the only person who left to account and answer questions. Maybe it might be nice now because there's nothing that is burning. But immediately when there are hot issues, you'll then remember that I'm not the only one in Italy who's supposed to come to Parliament. So I think your four executive principles should be part of the briefings and accounting processes in Parliament, and they should come and tell the members of Parliament what is that they are doing. So I think in future that's how it should be. The questions that have been asked in my absence, I'm sure, because there are no more questions for you. We can start answering questions.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I thank you very much for your concern for me. That protection is welcome. And I think, yeah, it's practical perhaps to get the overall conveners to be the ones who come along with me. I think already we do have two in the House, two overall conveners, and to be quite honest, I think it's doable. But we'll liaise with the DG in terms of ensuring that we come to the party on that issue. Just a comment on the comment. Establishing social dialogue at provincial and local level, I think it's an excellent intervention, and I think it will be useful if as this committee you begin to interrogate it and see if there's a way of taking that forward. I know for a fact that in the Eastern Cape province there is something called EXEC, and it does at times assume that social dialogue responsibility. I know in the Western Cape there's something called PDC, Western Cape Provincial Development Council. I know also that in Mpumalanga they did establish something towards the end of last year along the same lines as Mpumalanga Provincial Development Council. I know that in Northwest they do have something, they call it something, it's got a nice Tswana name. But when you look at it and you look at the participants in there, they're very much social partners. But I think it's something that is more ad hoc and it's very much haphazard. It's not well coordinated. So it's something that is what, and in KZN there is something that they are establishing now. I'm not sure at what stage it is. So, but that will be welcomed. And if there's anything we can do, or you can instruct us to do, once we've taken a decision, we'll be more than happy to assist in that regard. Labour broking, the processes that became a problem. The Department of Labour tabled something called the atypical forms of employment. No, not like that. I think it starts differently. New forms of work and the atypical forms of employment proposal in NEDLAC, or the changing nature of work and the atypical forms of employment. So the Department of Labor tabled a synthesis document. So there was research on that area by quite no less than five academics and experts in this field to investigate. And they were associated with universities to investigate this phenomenon. And coming out of those five papers, there was a synthesis report. So that's what was tabled in that, like a synthesis report about these atypical forms of employment. This is basically casualization and new ways of work. In 2003, it was tabled in that, like. We engaged with it. We engaged with it in two legs. The first leg was to look at the current instruments in the Department of Labor to see if we can't use those tools to curb the undesirable practices of these casualization or these new forms of work. That was the first leg, which we dealt with, and I think we dealt with quite successfully. And also using the inspectorate as the instrument that could deal with this. But the second leg was to look at what more can we do to ensure that we deal with that landscape. Now, it's a difficult issue. It was difficult, so we're not making headways. We're not finding convergence among the social partners. Until then, the minister, I think last year, signaled that, look, he's not getting anything from NEDLAC, and he wants to move on the matter. So we said, well, so be it. So, and the discussions at NEDLAC were very much at the conceptual stage, to say this is a challenge we have. And to a large extent, it was triggered by the fact that in the ruling party's election manifesto, there was an issue about this. So in a sense, it was triggered by this. And secondly, it was triggered by the framework for South Africa's response to the global economic crisis. There is a section in that framework that deals specifically with labor broking. So it was triggered in that way, that because in that framework that was finalized in February last year, there was an issue of labor broking, and it was coming out of a NEDLAC process, we had to grapple with it. So it was not out of sheer disrespect for the processes in Parliament or disregard of the processes. It was a process that was very much on our agenda. And the idea was not to conclude anything, because the only thing that the Department of Labor tabled in NEDLAC was a conceptual document. It was a document that says, we have a challenge. What is it that we can do about it? So government, the department was not prescriptive about we need to do A, B, or C. They're just presenting the problem and saying to stakeholders, how can we deal with this? And as I said earlier on, it was quite useful exercise in that it began to, you know, lift and elevate some of the issues that were problematic. So it was useful in that sense. But the idea was not to conclude anything. And of course, then there was the parliamentary process. And when the parliamentary process gained traction, it was when we had finalized our own processes. So for some reasons, people, for various reasons, would choose to use the NEDLAC process to advance a particular view in the parliamentary processes. I mean, that was mischievous, because when those processes were gaining traction, we had long, finished the first process in NEDLAC. But when that's the first chunk. I think the second chunk, I think in the 15 years of NEDLAC's existence, it's only twice where Parliament had to trigger a policy matter that NEDLAC had an interest in, only twice in 15 years. The first was an issue around the National Youth Commission, which now resulted into the National Youth Development Agency. That process was triggered in Parliament. It was for the first time when that happened, but it's for the second time now with the labor broking, where Parliament was ahead of everybody else in this process. So it becomes a problem and complicated in that once the process is triggered in Parliament, as NEDLAC, we can't dive in until we get a directive from the executive authority. We can't get involved in that process. It becomes difficult because the more superior or the more higher authority is driving the process. And it was precisely the same complications with the National Youth Commission's proposal on the National Youth Development Policy. We had the same problem. We had difficulties with what Parliament was suggesting, but there was nothing we could do. We couldn't engage with that proposal in the same way as we would interrogate a policy proposal from the executive authority. We couldn't. The minister brings the issue there. We boxed the minister. But this was coming from Parliament. It was very hard for us to really interrogate that policy. So it was just that confusion But I think we're back on track now. I think we're back on track now, very much on track on that issue. And those were the two questions, Madam Chair.
Were there no questions? Only two questions that were asked in my absence by the members. Okay. Yeah, I know what the members do. When they want to go, they have their own way. I didn't see your hand.
I want to get on it. What is interesting with NEDLAC? I thought that the response to this question of how do you make sure that these processes do not necessarily end at the national level? How do you accommodate challenges in the provincial level? I think this question is not just a question because we want to know how network is structured, but in a way, I will make an example of NUMSA had a job. What is called a job conference? Or, yeah, something of that nature. Yeah, job creation conference. Because they are tired of the summits, like the one that you mentioned, the Presidential Job Summit of 1998, where there are a number of decisions reached, but it's difficult to implement. But they wanted to have a situation where the outcomes of their meeting at least is felt at the provincial and local level. So I'm saying, as a result of the absence of these structures, in particular in those areas, it becomes difficult at that level to engage. I think the point we are raising is that we think it's important, in a way, even if you are not policing the decisions or consensus that is reached at network level nationally, but in a way in trying to look at what is it out of these policies that have been agreed upon is relevant to a particular province or municipality. I think that's the issue of how can we build something on top of that in order to streamline the approach. And to CCMA, the key performance area, very nice. But the problem that I have is that you're only targeting 2015. I was sitting here in 2010. There's nothing that says, I don't hear you saying, in order to arrive at 2015, this is what is going to be done. It becomes difficult now to look at the good program that you are trying to put in place to move with you, understanding that after 2 or 3 years, what is it that has been done? In particular, on the area of promoting mediation, because Khalifi last year in the strategic plan that we had, you see, he was sweating because the issue was like, what you want to see as CCMA is a situation where if the applicant does not appear in the consultation, than the commissioner have a right or power to dismiss the referral. And that didn't sound nicely with us. But I didn't see that here in your presentation, even in your strategy. So I think I take it as if you are no longer looking at that. Yes, you did, but then now you have seen what will be the repercussions as a result of that, then you decided to drop that. The other issue is that you last year when you came for annual report, you also made mention of a strategy of how do you minimize arbitration hours to be reviewed. And at that particular time, yes, it's an issue that you identified, but not necessarily having a strategy of how to deal with it. I thought one would hear that when you come now. We raised an issue, but I'm not sure whether it's the communication that the chairperson was talking about earlier, but I think we raised an issue last year when you came for annual report, an issue that was coming from a constituency where we are deployed. It was an issue of the employees, certain employees who blow the whistle. And that issue in that meeting, even if it was not supposed to have a resolution, but however, there were area issues that were hanging that were supposed to go back, because it also involved the issue of adjudication of tenders at CCMA. It's an issue that was coming also out of the report itself, where there was admission of maladministration. And to an extent where we said, one, we would like you to provide us with your one adjudication policy, and in particular the areas that we raised questions on. I think if my memory serves me well, it was 10th floor or 4th floor where there was renovation. There was no tendering processes followed. And that response was that, no, the governing body gave go ahead on this matter. And then we wanted even minutes to that effect as to who was part of that meeting, all those things. So I thought that let me raise, because I can't just write a letter to you. I will wait for you to come in forums of this nature and then raise what I've raised in the previous meeting in order for us to have an understanding. The last point, Madam Chair, is that it's important because I'd like to make follow-ups. Remember last time when you were here, we appreciated the fact that, in particular here in Gauteng, I'm saying here, yeah, because I'm from Gauteng, particular in Gauteng, where I come from, was that there's improvement in terms of communication when a referral has been made. It's very quick, and mediation is arranged within 2 weeks, for that matter. You get a jet and so on. It was an issue that you are going to make sure that it's applicable even to other provinces. And I thought that that's one of the things that you may allude to, talk to in your strategy. Thank you very much.
The issue, Honorable Nyakemba, that you raised last time, I made a follow-up to get a full report. That's what I was referring to when I was talking about the communication channels. It will come. It will. It's in the process. It will come.
So you said before the response, I think it won't take more than 6 months for it to come.
Definitely not. It's not 6 months. It won't be 6 months. Mr. Mkize, I think there's a question from Nyakemba to you, and I think there's one question, and then after that it will be CCMA.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for demystifying the question, Honourable Member. Now the question of provincial NEDLACs, it's an old debate in NEDLAC. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, COSATU is among those who are against this provincial NEDLACs. They call them PEDLACs, Provincial Economic Development and Labour Councils, for a simple reason. The criteria for membership in NEDLAC has many legs into it. But the one leg to it is you've got to be a national organization. So the argument from COSATU was that, look, how does it become a problem if they articulate a particular position at NEDLAC at a national level if they are national? And that presupposes that the mandating process in COSATU starts from a local to a province, then to national. So whatever position that gets articulated at national is a position that is reflective of the aspiration of all the members in the whole country. Likewise, in NEDLAC we deal with national governments or national departments. National departments, it's assumed that what they say has national jurisdiction. So I said, well, if you're dealing with government at the national level, you don't have to, again, deal with government at the provincial or local level. That goes. It's a given. You will also recall that when NEDLAC was formed, there was a minister without portfolio at that time whose responsibility was the RDP. And that was the minister that was, in a sense, responsible for the development chamber of NEDLAC and the community constituency of NEDLAC. And the purpose of, and also the Minister of Provincial and Local Government of the past, now is called COCTA. But that minister had a role to play in the development chamber, just to take care of the provincial and local dimension in the NEDLAC processes. So it was never an issue that the issues at a national level at NEDLAC don't mirror the issues at provincial level. But a lot of things have happened. I think the mandating processes are no longer as robust as they used to be. it's quite usual now to find a position being articulated at national level which does not necessarily represent the views at provincial or local level. So it's not unusual to get yourself into that situation. I think the robustness in the mandating processes has created a problem. And I think provinces and local governments have recognized this, and for that reason they are making an effort of establishing their own social dialogue institutions without any link to the national, to the center. But I think the one thing that they're doing well is that I'm made aware of any initiative that seeks to establish a social dialogue institution, either at provincial or local level, because I'm called upon to assist. So I'm aware of these initiatives, and I'm very much part of these initiatives, but at a symbolic level. You know, I get an invite to go and the keynote address at the launch. It's quite nice, you know, a recognition that I made a contribution. But it's an issue that we need to look at, as you are saying, going forward, in terms of how do we use social dialogue to deal with some of the challenges at low, at provincial and local level. But I think there will be a huge reluctance for NEDLAC at the national level to even revisit that decision. I think it's a decision that it's national, that's it. We deal with the national tier of government or sphere of government. Locals, if they want to set up their own thing, they can set it up. We can assist in them setting up this thing. But I think what we need to do as the center is to polish up communication. I think as and when we take decisions at national level, we need to find a way of how we communicate that to provincial and local level, and maybe help, you know, encourage them to set up their own things at that level. I think that was the only comment, Chair.
Thank you, CCMA.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable Nkemba, the first question requested of me is in relation to the targets that are targeting 2015. And I certainly, from his perspective, understand the concern. And for going forward, when I come, I'll bring the detailed operational plans for year by year and put them out and the points taken in relation to that. The intention was to put the strategy and the targets for the strategy going forward. But, I mean, I think the point is valid, and thank you for that. Just to answer you, though, why we didn't address the issue about whether a commissioner can dismiss a case at a conciliation, I'm nervous to say this in a much higher power than that, but a higher power than the CCMA has made a ruling on that, and that's the Labour Appeal Court, and they have said the CCMA can't do that, so we believe that matter is now resolved. I'm quite happy to make available the court case or the transcript of the judgment if that would assist you going forward. But that is why we haven't targeted it as a specific issue in relation to the strategy, if you can understand the point in relation to that. I didn't go through point by point because of the brief on our targets and our strategy, but if you look in the handout we gave you and our balanced scorecard underneath goal 2 and the second point 2.2.1 and 2.2.2, we very specifically set out the process in relation to minimizing the reviews in the Labour Court and the progress and the targets that we're making there, and we've actually made quite good progress. To a certain degree, I think we need some more work in relation to that, in relation to our social strategy. And then if you look in the new report, which goes back to your initial question, item 15, where we dealt with high performance, high impact delivery of services and the balance between quantity and quality, it's summarized there in relation to dispute resolution efficiencies, which is what that is. But I accept your point that if you maybe don't understand the detail, which I wouldn't expect a member in that much to know because it's the work that I deal with every day, it's not clear, but that's where we've put it as a point. But as I said earlier, next time I'll make sure I unpack it in more detail for clarity. And I think the point is valid, and thank you for that. In relation to other questions, the Chair has indicated, well, let me deal with firstly, you asked me to follow up in relation to the process and the speed of dispute resolution, maybe in Gauteng. I want to be a little bit irreverent in answering you to say that the board of the CCMA actually believes that the Gauteng province is operating the worst. And that, so by inference, the balance of the country is actually operating a bit better. So Having said that, we have in place, and if you also go and look at the operating efficiencies we put up there, that's at a national level. We do produce every month, and I'm more than happy to make it available through the Secretary of the Committee, provincial statistics, and that there has been a significant improvement in the communication. I think that what you're referring to also was the fact that you get SMSs and a lot of electronic communication about cases going through. That is rolled out nationally, and everybody does receive that now, and it certainly has had a major impact for us on the attendance of social partners to hearings and cases. And obviously the knock-on effect is we get better settlement rates in relation to the mediation strategy that you talked about, and also making sure that individuals have their right to social justice addressed in relation to that. And then the last issue in relation to the follow-up process, I mean, I think the Chair has dealt with it. I did, in relation to what you requested, send correspondence to the committee as well through the DG's office. Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you. Honorable Nyakembo, you have a follow-up question?
Yeah, just with due respect to the late director, I think these governing body members were saying Gauteng is doing bad. Maybe they don't stay in Gauteng. They stay somewhere where I don't know, because I'm talking from responses. You see, even if I'm no longer working for a union, people, when they see me, they see a union official, and then I advise them accordingly, which papers to fill in, where to send them. And they come to the constituency immediately and say, there's a response, because I've also included my cell number. Here is an SMS which came within 5 days after the referral has been sent, that it has been received, and then this is the reference number, and when is the conciliation date and time and the room. So maybe they don't stay in half day. I've got rooms, then I will give each other a room in order for them to witness it.
Thank you, members of the department. I wish to praise you for the detailed information that you gave to us today with regards to your threat plans. At least we have an idea as to what is that you are going to do as the department, and we have taken into account the areas where you need more finances. I think it was NetLec, and I don't remember which entity. I think all other entities are fine with the budget that is provided to them. I only had NetLife. So we will engage on the reports that you have given to us and take into account certain areas that we need to take forward as a committee with the relevant stakeholders, and we'll do that. Thank you very much. You will be able to catch your flight. That watch in front of me is saying the time is 3:15. Go well. See you next.